Margaret Robinson with the Two-Spirited Roundtable Project, and I'm here today with Art Zuckel of Two-Spirited People of the First Nations.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Hi. So you were asking about the term Two-Spirit. So when I was about 14 years old, living back in my traditional territory, my mom looked at me and she said, "You're Ogokwe." My mom had diabetes, and shortly after she said that word to me, I never heard that word, or I never saw that word again until I was 21. And when I saw that word in a library, it translated into wise woman. So I knew back then, when I was 14 years old, that my mom recognized me to being what we consider to be two-spirit today. That's more of a modern term. But in our languages, all over North America, there would be words to describe people who were of a different gender. So for in my case, Ogokwe, or wise woman. So just around the term Two-Spirit, our agency is called Two-Spirited People of the First Nations. Initially, when we first started, we were struggling with a name to come up with. The first name we came up with was Gays and Lesbians of the First Nations in Toronto. And the acronym was GLFN. And everybody used to say, "Gee, I had a lot of fun." And so it became a fun place to gather. So I think the early days, and I'll tie in the HIV piece to this, when a number of us moved here to Toronto, we had noticed that there were other Aboriginal or Indigenous people living in the city of Toronto, but they would congregate in the gay bars, but not necessarily get together and socialize. When HIV and AIDS hit our community, it hit us hard. And what we noticed is that a lot of our friends were becoming ill, and we came up with impromptu care teams. We had no idea what we were doing, but we all knew that we needed to be there to support our friends, right? And so as we did this in the 80s, then we realized we needed to have an organization. And that's where the two names came about. So in the early 90s, the term Two-Spirit, we had heard that being used in the United States. And so we sort of adopted that as well, so it sort of fit into what we were doing. If you ever see our logo, it's this one, sorry, and you can't see it, but what it looks like is that there is the depiction of a male and female spirit on each side of our logo, and we still use it to this day. People have come forward to identify themselves as being part of our community, and we kind of sort of set that people who identified as Aboriginal, self-identified as Aboriginal, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, and intersex, right, would be members of our agency, and that's how we started our organization.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
How do you find people's use of the term Two-Spirited has changed over time?
Right. I think a lot of people, and mainly Aboriginal people, have come to accept it, but not everybody will use that term or feel comfortable using that term. So there are some people, like when I go out there to do a talk or do facilitate a discussion group or be in the community, all of us will introduce ourselves in a very traditional way in our Aboriginal languages. So I always say, "Bozo, Artzokol, Dijnakaz, Anishinaabe, Ogokwe, Laktamalak, and Donji." So a lot of our Two-Spirit people will do the similar, same thing of who they are, what their name is, and what territory they come from, is the translation of what I've just said. Mm-hmm. And so some people have adopted that, but some people can't get used to the term Two-Spirit because it's something really new, and they don't see themselves just yet being identified. So that debate around the term is still being, it'll be ongoing for a while, right, within even our community members.
Were there other Indigenous terms that you were familiar with, say within Ontario, relating to describing how people, sexual orientation or gender identity, were there terms that you had heard other than the ones that you've already mentioned?
Yes, I've heard Two-Spirit women describe themselves in a traditional name as well, right? But more so, I think, in the early days, we had come across a book And it's either living the spirit or the spirit in the flesh. And the authors of those two books are Walter Williams or Will Roscoe, who are authors in the United States. And in one of those books, at the back of the book, it lists all of the tribal nations in North America, and it has the gender names for each, as many as they could identify. Just maybe as a side note, I've been talking to an Inuk gay man who in their language may not have had a traditional name to identify somebody who is a sexual orientation or a different gender, but it's basically translates into a man who sleeps with another man. So it's maybe a more modern term for them as well. Mm-hmm. Our languages are always constantly being revised, updated. I remember years ago that a number of Aboriginal speakers of different languages would get together to debate the new terms that, you know, modern day has put us into. So for example, 100 years ago, we didn't have a computer.
Right.
So, you know, those kinds of things. And so today also, those words may be being developed by our linguistic people, right? That we don't know that what words they're developing, right?
So the languages are current, they're living and
yes.
They're changing in response to modern circumstances.
Yes, that's true, yeah, yeah.
What impact do you feel like colonialism has had on the way you view Indigenous sexuality?
Wow, that's a great one. So one of the things that I did when I've been doing all of this work, so primarily we're funded to do HIV and AIDS work, but at the same time, what I always try to do is bring our experience or our history into the work that I do. I did a research project on the HIV prevention initiatives for Two-Spirit men. And in that document, near Sault Ste. Marie, through historical and archives documents, we were able to find an incident where settlers were encountering Two-Spirit people for the first time. And of course, they didn't understand the whole concept. When they got together and first saw each other, the Two-Spirit person made advances to the settler, and the settler was absolutely, you know, flabbergasted and disgusted. But the Two-Spirit person was accompanied by a straight Aboriginal woman. And so I kind of use that as a sort of first case of documented homophobia in Canada.
Wow.
And I use that over and over again to show that, you know, pre-European contact, that in our communities, there was no homophobia. I say that over and over again, that there was no homophobia in our community. Everybody is part of our community. I'm just finishing up another research project called the Two-Spirit Men HIV/AIDS Wellness and Longevity Study, called Two Shoals. And in that, when we talked to Two-Spirit men living with HIV and AIDS, who had been living with HIV and AIDS for over 10 years or more, one of the things that we had to sort of look at, and as we were documenting and coding our information, is how were these men saying their experiences to us? So what we developed was a model, and if I can describe it to you, it starts off with the self, and the next circle would be the family, the next circle would be the community, the next circle would be the nation, the next circle would be the world, and the next circle would be the universe. So as we were documenting what people had said to us, we tried to capture it in a culturally appropriate ways. And so our document will reveal that there are 7 paths to resiliency as an Aboriginal person who's living. And that's how, as researchers, and as how we document this. So what people say to us, we bring it back to them and say, this is what you've said to us, and put it in that context. And we'll be releasing those results in Sydney, Australia in July 2014. So the methods piece is now available on our website at twospirits.com.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
What kind of resistance or homophobia do you encounter now in Aboriginal communities? How has it changed since pre-contact?
I think, you know, here in in the Greater Toronto Area, we've been doing this since the 1980s. And so more recently here in Toronto has been the release of the Toronto Aboriginal Research Project Report, of which it was important, and I've advocated for the inclusion of Two-Spirit people to be included in that. And now that that report has come out, it's there. We are part of the community, but yet we still have challenges and issues that we need to be included in, right? And at the same time, recently, on coming up in March 19th, will be the release of the case studies report, of which two spirit people will be in part of that process. And there we have more information about Two-Spirit and their involvement within the community in the Greater Toronto Area. Now that's a bubble. I always say what happens in Toronto is because we've done a lot of hard work to maintain our visibility within the community, but that may not be happening in other urban or smaller communities across the country where homophobia may be still existing, right? So, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done, and people can use some of the resources that we've developed to help them along the route around addressing homophobia. In 1994, we did a document or a policy called a non-discrimination policy. And we did that internally because what we were noticing is that some of our Aboriginal trans women were being very disrespectful to straight Aboriginal women. And we said that you cannot do that. You know, this is not respectful. So we came in with a policy. So what we did is internally, we provided training to our community members, to our board of directors and our staff and our Two-Spirit community. And so that kind of subsided some of the discrimination that was happening within ourselves, right? But we saw a need for it to go out further. So the next step that we did is we went over to the Native Canadian Center and we introduced this policy to them as well. Mm-hmm. Because it also had policies around not discriminating against somebody's HIV status as well. And at the same time, you know, their sexual orientation or their gender. They passed it, right? And then this is 1994. Now, if you speed forward, over the years, organizations have a lot of staff turnover. A lot of people move on. So sometimes what happens is that they may have a policy in place. I'm not saying in particular the Native Canadian Center, but other agencies where, you know, that policy that might be in place has not been revised or part of their ongoing internal training that they need to get out there. But it's come down quite a bit.
Still, it makes a difference if you can point to the policy and hold people accountable to the policy.
Yes, yeah.
That's even a big though, step.
Yeah. I know, especially if it's on the wall, you know, in a plaque, right? Yeah.
How has doing two-spirited work changed for you since you started to the way it is now?
We've done a lot, and I think one of the things which was a highlight was in 2003, helped to organize the International Two-Spirit Gathering. We had the largest attendance. It was about 145 Two-Spirit people that came to a week-long event that we had.
Was that here in Toronto?
It was organized by Two-Spirited People of the First Nations and the Ontario Aboriginal HIV/AIDS Strategy. And it was at near Rama First Nation in Geneva Park, just north of the city. So we got buses and bussed everybody up there, and that we were able to have sweats and, you know, build a sweat lodge and do ceremonies and have canoe races, and we had a drag show. We did everything, you know, and we had and it's cultural sharing. So we had some of our discussion groups or workshops outside underneath a tree. So some people were talking about prisoners and HIV and AIDS issues under one tree. It was summertime, it was beautiful. So we weren't always bound to being indoors to do some of our activities, right? So we took some of our activities outside. Now, just to sort of, over the years also, one of the things around educating, you know, being visible, our awareness, has always been that we are always part of the gay pride events here in Toronto. In the beginning, gay pride for us was like a demonstration around the governments, both the provincial and federal, because way back then there was still a lot of homophobia and discrimination and HIV and AIDS issues and other issues that were impacting our community. So it was a very militant, you know, like it wasn't a celebration. It was more of a protest. And we did die-ins, right? I keep on saying to people that years ago when we used to get together with people who were very ill, it was not uncommon to see people lay down in a meeting and be restful so that they could participate because they were experiencing difficulty with pain and
just didn't have the energy to participate any other way.
And so that we've been through that. And now if you move fast forward, you know, it's now a celebration of who we are. And so more recently, the trans community has stepped forward, and in the last 3 or 4 years, there has been a trans march, and there's a dyke march on a Saturday, and then on the Sunday is the big event. And for us, you know, we have to start planning like in the winter months for something that's going to happen at the end of June, because we don't do the same thing every year. Mm-hmm. We come up with a different theme. One year we said we are going to have a float in the parade, but in the parade only our traditional people will be allowed to ride on the float. So the drummers and we had some of our singers and some of our dancers in regalia, mm-hmm. that were on the truck on the float, so they would be up higher visible. And then the rest of the people would march behind us and celebrate with us. And this year, you know, we don't know what we're going to be doing yet, but hopefully it'll be just as exciting for people to come and join. And I know over the years too that it's not only the Two Spirit people who are marching in the Gay Pride Parade, but now it's our allies and our partners, you know. They're coming out to help celebrate with us too. So in the beginning, it was a very small group of us, and each year the numbers get larger, larger, and larger, so that we have a large contingent in the parade. And people are actually making their way to Toronto earlier this year because there's a human rights conference that precedes the Gay Pride Parade this year. So World Pride is really keeping us busy as well. And we're hooking up with the Michael Jean Foundation to maybe have the more inclusion of Two-Spirit youth in these events. So we're attempting something new again, you know. And on Two-Spirit youth, our agency is primarily HIV and AIDS. We're funded that way. But the Toronto Aboriginal Support Services Council recently undertook a research project of Two-Spirit youth and homelessness. Mm. And I've done a couple of studies around migration and mobility, and Doe O'Brien did Two-Spirit youth, you know, coming to the city and what are their experiences. But more recently, the research project that around homelessness, the first weekend they were here, I think they had 14 young Two-Spirit people. And the second time they came to use our offices, there were 22
wow.
Two-Spirit people. So to me, you know, that sort of says, wow, you know, they're here in the city. They're not living with HIV and AIDS, which is a good thing, but at the same time, they're struggling because they're homeless. And homeless may mean that they're couch surfing, they're staying with friends, you know, they're not actually visibly maybe on the streets, but that's the condition that they're at. So again, when you ask about homophobia, that may be some of the reasons. I wish, you know, I had that research project to sort of find out why, you know, they've migrated to Toronto at a young age. You know, is it to come here to go to school? Is it here, you know, what are they doing? You know, what's the circumstances behind them coming earlier, right?
How old were you when you moved to Toronto?
I was probably about 28, yeah. And back then, there was a lot of racism still, the drunken Indian syndrome that I went through. And so we had to sort of prove ourselves. And when we started our organization, I'll go right back to the very beginning. When we started our organization, one of the very first things that we did is that any activity that we did we did not have any alcohol. So we used to have tea and bannocks, and we used to have seasonal feasts, you know, the solstice. Mm-hmm. And we still do that to this day. Occasionally we'll have a winter solstice feast and the spring feast and so on. And we do those things still, yeah. And just I want to say also too that some of our community members don't have the financial resources to access our sacred medicines, tobacco, sweetgrass, sage, and others. And they can come here and they can get those things from us. And a lot of the agencies in Toronto, so for over at Anishinaabe Health, you can get those items as well there. So a lot of the agencies are providing these things to Two-Spirit people.
Yeah, I've noticed some places they have a set of tobacco ties pre-made.
Pre-made, yeah.
So that people don't miss out on seeing an elder because they don't have a tobacco
right.
tie with them.
Right, true. Yeah, and we do that here too. Yeah.
I want to thank you for talking to me.
All right.
And I look forward to speaking with you again.
All right, thank you.